Hey everyone, it's Jeremiah once again from Cultish. We are almost at the end of our historical origins series. This is going to be part 5 of William Branham and the Message. Before we get started with the episode, this episode of the podcast is brought to you by our merchandise store, shopcultish.com. If you want to get some cool Cultish merch, as always, you can go to shopcultish.com and get all your Cultish goodies there. And definitely appreciate for all of you who purchase that merchandise. We'll be getting some new designs in soon by the end of the year. So definitely check that out. Also, a program like this cannot continue without your support. So if you feel led to support Cultish, you can become a one-time, you can do a one-time donation, or you can become a monthly partner with us. Go to thecultishshow.com. Go to the donate tab. You can donate one time or monthly. And also, if you want to support the studio, and go ahead and make Cultish a possibility, you can go to apologiastudios.com. You can subscribe and become an all-access member. And definitely look forward to, if you get that, definitely look forward to all the additional content that you will get. All right, so our guest today, once again, is John Collins. This is part 5 of the talking about William Branham, the formulation of a very popular movement that William Branham played a significant role in, called the Latter Rain. And we're going to be discussing that and a bunch of other unique topics in part 5 of this series. Enjoy the podcast.
My name is Eddie, and I was in a call.
Planet Earth about to be recycled. Your only chance to survive or evacuate is to leave with us.
Started as an effort by a charismatic preacher to build a new society, but it ended, of course, with the tragic deaths of more than 900 people.
Please, for God's sakes, let's get on with it. We've lived as no other people have lived and loved. We've had as much of this world as you're going to get. Let's just be done with it. Let's be done with the agony of it. This is a revolutionary suicide. This is not a self-destructive suicide. So they'll pay for this. They brought this upon us.
You're in a cult. I love you, and I want you out of it and with Christ.
But you're...
There's a move in the message of blacks marrying whites, whites marrying blacks, and folks think it's all right. But you know what? My God still has nationalities outside the city. Now watch this. Brother Bram says, high breeding, how terrible high breeding. The hybrid, the people. It's a big molding pot. I got hundreds of precious colored friends that's born again Christians. But on this line of segregation and things that they're talking about, high breeding the people. What? Tell me what a fine cultured, fine Christian colored woman would want her baby to be a mulatto by a white man. No, sir. It's not right.
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The Cultish, entering the kingdom of the cults. My name is Jeremiah Roberts. I'm one of the co-hosts here. I am joined by Andrew, the super sleuth of the show. Our jaws are obviously still trying to pick those up off the ground. Once again, we have been going through a wild ride through William Branham, his movement with the message. We've been doing this extended series with John Collins. We're here once again. John, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me back.
Real quickly, before we kind of jump into the context of that clip, just tell everyone real quickly, where can they find, by now, this is, I believe, the 5th part of our series. And so definitely check out the previous episodes we've done on William Branham. This particular time, we're focusing in on the Latter Rain. John, real quickly, where can people find you if they want to find out more after listening to this podcast series we're doing with you?
All of my research is published to william-branham.org. You can also find me on Amazon in the book Preacher Behind the White Hoods, a critical examination of William Branham and his message. And you can also find in the newsletter section of Alternative Considerations of Jonestown and People's Temple, you'll find some of the information there.
Mm, Okay, appreciate that. So definitely check that out. Lots of different additional research if you want to go further into these episodes, if you've really enjoyed this content here with John. So real quickly, can you just explain real quickly that clip you were listening to with someone named Donnie Reagan, and explain to just a little about what he was, his ideology, and how he related to William Branham, kind of bring him into the whole scenario of where we are with the latter rain. And I'll just say real quickly, you know, just hearing that clip, we'll play another clip in the second that will be shocking to people. But people need to realize, too, that words get thrown around like racism, white supremacy, or even systematic racism. And a lot of times it's used as an emotional impact word. It's more about how it makes you feel or makes someone else feel versus what it is tangibly. This is something that historically was a movement that placed, that had underlying ideologies that pushed this movement. So that's just something you want to be wary of while hearing this clip. So can you just bring everyone in, John, to the context of Donnie Reagan and how he fits in to, at this moment, Branham's ministry with Roy Davis in the latter rain? How does that all tie together?
Yeah, Donnie Reagan is a William Branham message cult pastor. I first heard him actually in the early 90s, deep in the Ozark Mountains in Missouri. There was a circuit of different churches that he traveled and preached at, and he became very popular in the message in the United States. There were people, I lived in Missouri at the time, and there were people from all over the nation who came to hear Donnie Reagan preaching. He is the pastor of the of a church in Johnson City, Tennessee, that is affiliated with the cult. And what he's saying is shocking. I mean, even to me, after having left, I'm now shocked hearing this that I once believed, and I could apologize forever for being in. But he's basically repeating what is typically said in many of the churches, but he became he went viral very quickly over these statements. They hit the news media, and I believe it was 2014. He was labeled the most racist pastor in America over these things that he's saying. What a lot of people don't realize is what he's saying isn't really his own words. He's actually repeating William Branham and just offering his support. So he's quoting William Branham, and he's saying, "I support this separation of races, etc." But what he doesn't realize is he's quoting William Branham during the time in which William Branham was working from a religious standpoint to back Roy Davis in his battle against the integration of schools between blacks and whites.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, it's one of those things too, when you think about the undue influence, a lot of times people are just regurgitating the talking points of the cult leader in which they encompass their cult identity. So in that case, that would have been really, Donnie Reagan would have really been parroting in many ways, is William Branham's underlying religious ideology that was really, he co-labored with Roy Davis to formulate this, correct?
Correct. There's, in fact, in one of the clips of Donnie Reagan, I'm not sure if you have it or not, but he's talking about William Branham is saying that the African-American people have things much better than the white people.
Yeah.
And the whole movement this religious movement that sided with the white supremacy groups, their main argument was, well, the black people have schools and they're far better than white schools, so why do they need to come to the white schools? And it was not just William Branham. It was basically every white supremacist was doing this. And William Branham took it a bit further because he introduced what he called his serpent seed or Christian identity doctrine.
Right.
And he labeled it as hybriding. He argued against the African Americans coming to the white schools because the chance of two people falling in love, getting married, and producing, William Branham says, uses the racial slur mulatto. He talks about they would produce these mixed race children, And he called it high breeding. They're high breeding the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm on that note, I'm going to play this additional clip from Donnie Reagan, and I just want to kind of give a warning. We played this clip at the very beginning. It might have been disturbing to people. This clip, we're playing this not to glorify in any sense what is being said here, but open you all up to the reality of the fact that this is, you know, a bad theology hurts people, and taking something as beautiful as the gospel, where it's there's neither Greek nor male nor female, and just seeing this broad variety of people from every tongue, tribe, and nation of how the gospel is supposed to bring, being this unifying factor, but to take that and distort it in such a way is just, we want to just show you the weight and the depth of it. And I understand some of you may be listening in who possibly may have experienced some very, you may have experienced racism, being treated in a way based off of your ethnicity and being spoken to in a derogatory way. So I just want to warn you if this might be disturbing for you if you have a background and history of that. So I just want to let you know that as we play this clip. So again, we're going to go ahead and play this clip from Donnie Reagan. Again, this clip is disturbing. Again, if you have little ones around, you might want to just consider either turning it down or just wait till you're by yourself. Again, this is it's disturbing, but it's something you need to hear to get the gravity and context of what we are dealing with William Branham in the Latter Rain. Here's this clip by Donnie Reagan.
Tell me what good, smart, intelligent, beautiful colored woman. And you tell me what KKK guy would call a black woman beautiful. You tell me what white supremacists would call any black woman beautiful. This is not from a white supremacist. This is not from a racist. This is from a prophet of God. Watch him honor and give respect, not putting the white above the other or the black above the other. Beautiful colored woman would want to have a baby by a white man to make it a mulatto. Not sense. Many things the color, now listen, white folks, many things the color people has is far beyond the white man. This is not a white supremacist saying this. This is not a racist saying this. This is a man who loves truth.
Yeah, so I'm at a loss of words of what to say. I'm not going to repeat really anything at all in any sense, but again, this is just to show you, this is the reality of this person's heart. I'm at a loss of words what to say. So back to you, John. Maybe give your thoughts on this as much as you can. And all of that of what he just said is directly a byproduct of regurgitating William Branham's underlying ideology of the Latter Rain. Is that correct?
Correct. I actually have a flood of emotions listening to this because I was born and raised to think this way, but I was also born and raised to think that I wasn't racist and that racism itself was wrong. So in my head, there's this weird tug of war between right and wrong. I know right and wrong, but I'm being told that this thing that I'm in is right. He uses the word hybrid often. William Branham used it increasingly more whenever Roy Davis started his battle against the integration of schools. And, you know, now that I'm distanced from this, I'm separate from this, and my mind is starting to reprogram in the normal way, I'm thinking, you know, he's referring to hybrid food several times in the sermons, how you take one type of food and you mix it with another type of food and it doesn't produce as good of a product. And he's comparing that to people. So now he's literally labeled African Americans as one type of human and whites as another type of human, and trying to explain that if the two mix, they're not as good of a human. And I honestly can say that while I was in this is the way that I thought, but now that I've left, I'm just mortified that this was in my head.
Wow. Okay. And so, yeah, I can only imagine what that must have been like. I mean, you kind of grow up, I mean, a lot of us have our cultural upbringings and having a certain way in which you just think about the world and not, but all of a sudden when you have a reality of how, not only how this is wrong, but honestly, how this has affected people, has harmed people. I can only imagine, even for many people who come out of even a movement similar to this, realizing the harm that comes upon people, almost sort of that shame or that guilt or wanting to find atonement for the wrongdoings. I'm thinking about, for example, Megan Phelps, who defected from Westboro Baptist, when I remember listening to her on the Joe Rogan Experience, and you could just hear as she was talking about the times where they protested soldiers' funerals and just the underlying guilt, you could just feel that she still had, like she was trying to vicariously atone for her wrongdoings through confession on that podcast, and just seeing the burden that she had. You know, I just remember that too. So I do really appreciate your transparency and vulnerability here, John. Definitely much appreciated. Mm-hmm. So would you also just tie this in and just continue on with the formulation of the latter rain? Because again, this is something that is really was foundational for a lot of people within the realms. I'm not really want to name names specifically at this point in time, but just within the realms of hypercharismania, it really laid a foundation that a lot of people still appeal to this day. So can you explain to us the origins of the latter rain, how all these people, Roy Davis, William Branham, and then Donnie Reagan, how they all fit in together with the formulation of that?
Yeah, it's such a complicated mess, to be honest. And whenever you think of a clip like this, you're thinking, what in the world could this have to do with a evangelical post-World War II healing revival? Whenever I came across this, it's like one of many things that I had to just sit over here to the side, and this is such a complicated mess, I'm going to research this later. And I just basically dove deeper into trying to understand the timeline of William Branham. And I was studying the timeline of Roy Davis at the time. Davis was out in Los Angeles, California, between, I think it was 1944 and 1945. And at the same time, William D. Upshaw, who we mentioned, I think, in the last episode, mm-hmm. joined him there to help establish a basically a front to fund their white supremacy groups. And each time that I tried to get into studying, you know, the movement, the timeline, the racism kept the white supremacy groups, the racism, the people who are supportive of white supremacy groups, they just kept entering the timeline. And the further I went in time, the more frequent I started noticing it. So, you know, Donnie Reagan fits into this basically. He's became the face and the message of the guy who speaks racism, but again, he's not saying anything really different than any other cult pastor is saying. He's just the one who got caught. Mm-hmm. The rest of them, you know, they're following basically the same movement. And the real question that I had to face eventually was this movement even anything to do with God? Was God in any way, shape, or form behind any of it? Mm. And I think if you examine the fruits of the tree, you can see from a statement like this what was behind this.
That's really big. And that's a great point. And I'm looking forward to unraveling that. And just so you know, too, and as we've been progressing in this series, we're talking about we're kind of doing a zoom in to the small picture of these people like William Branham, Roy Davis, and a lot of these other characters. But alongside, we're also zooming out and showing you the bigger timeline, the bigger picture of different historical events. You know, we're talking about the Prohibition era and the Great Depression, how that affected that. And now we talked about that in earlier episodes. So in the latter rain and the formulation of it, it was the end of World War II. So that was really where this all began. So you think about, like visually, you think about those pictures that are infamous of the ending of World War II, the people in the streets who are waving the flags of the confetti falling down, and, you know, the people in Germany who are just all the destruction, devastation, and just trying to pick up the pieces, or that infamous picture of that sailor who's, leaning over and kissing his sweetheart as they finally got home. It's an infamous, famous picture. Mm-hmm. So, but it was in that that the, from my understanding, that the Latter Rain began to formulate, because it's one of those things too, even when there's a peace treaty of something of a magnitude like World War II, not shortly thereafter, there became to be just be tensions about how long will this peace last. And a lot of times in with that times of uncertainty where different folks, especially those of evangelist persuasion or tent revival persuasion, will use that to try and exploit people's uncertainties, especially if they have a certain end times visions or eschatology in which to convince people the end of the world is happening to formulate their group. So that's really from your article that's actually on the Jonestown Research Center. Is that really where that came about, the post-World War II sort of trying to give answers in regards to the end times visions of what that meant for the end of the world around that time? Is that really the focal point historically?
That's part of it. There are a lot of trails that lead to this mess. You could study also the Pentecostal movement. Pentecostalism itself, the modern Pentecostalism began in 1907, I think it was, Azusa Street in Los Angeles. And the Pentecostal movement itself was sort of dying out, but yet the leaders of that movement were still clinging to the fact that they were looking to Joel 2 for the prophecy of the latter rain. And it never came with the Pentecostals of that time. So you have World War II has ended. You have an entire nation who's briefly celebrating, but then suddenly turning to fear for the Red Scare and all of the things that came with not having a true ending and a true peace on Earth. So they were expecting World War III was coming, and you had this group of Pentecostals up in Saskatchewan, Canada, who were literally trying to create a religious army that could usher in the end of the world from God's side to bring peace that the world was unable to bring through war. I mean, it's just one of, there's probably 20 or 30 different trails that lead to the climax, but in each of those trails, they all end with basically this simple fact. You have William Branham, who's going all through Canada, who's, he's basically forming the foundation that he's going to build upon into statements like you heard at the beginning of the show. And you had a group of men who were just completely blindsided by this. They thought this was a man of God, and they thought that the things that he was doing could only be done through God. So they basically just decided to act on it. And he became the leader of, several different groups at that time.
So can you key us into exactly like what the hope of what the latter rain was? For example, were they thinking that there was this evil that was coming? So they were trying to join together to create kind of like an authority that the old ancient biblical church had in great power through like prophets and supernatural gifts and prophecy. Can you describe that in a sense in the Latter Rain movement?
Yeah. So, in the New Testament, it talks about whenever on the day of Pentecost, there's a specific quote that's mentioning, I'm drawing a blank on the quote, but it's mentioning referring to Joel 2, a prophecy in Joel 2.
Right.
And it's basically that was, if you're a Christian and you understand the Bible context, it's basically basically saying that this is the latter rain that came from the former rain. Well, Pentecostalism took this a step further. They weren't really satisfied, at least in my opinion, on what the Bible says was the day of Pentecost. They wanted a new day of Pentecost, and they threw it into basically a much larger timeline that could include the United States. And Pentecostalism itself, they had this revival that just went very strong and fizzled out. And so Latter Rain was basically an attempt to keep that flame going. So they started looking to the original Azusa Street Pentecostal as the former rain to their Latter Rain. So they essentially took what was already repeated in the Bible and then repeated it within their own movement.
Wow. So what's the danger in that then? Like taking things like being, let's say, like apostles of today, like what's the danger of that in the latter rain movement, essentially, in terms of their authority that they could have over their members?
There are two that I refer to whenever I have this discussion. One of them is a name familiar to a lot of people, both in the message cult and outside. Ern Baxter was a man who toured with William Branham from 1947 to 1953. And Baxter was involved in Branham's early meetings in Canada. So he saw this whole latter rain thing form. He saw what became of it. And in 1953, he decided to part ways because, and I'll quote him directly, he said, "I think there can be a lesson in this. Branham as a miracle worker had a real place. Branham as a teacher was outside of his calling. The fruits of his teaching ministry are not good." The thing that I disagree with Mr. Baxter on is the miracles. There was also a gentleman named Alfred Pohl who was deeply involved in organizing Branham's campaigns, and he did a series of interviews after Branham left. There were several, you know, news of Branham and what he was doing went all through the United States and Canada. They claimed that he was healing thousands of people. Branham claimed he was healing thousands of people. And newspapers were trying to find just one person healed so that they could report on this wonderful thing. And they were having trouble because they could not find anybody who was actually healed. And there was a gentleman named Alfred Pohl who was involved in organizing the meetings. And he gives his testimony as to what happened and the impact it had on his life. He almost left religion entirely because he said basically that Branham came in and he told all of these people through these prayer lines, "You're healed, go home, be well." Branham had this way of, when people came to the platform to be healed, it isn't what most people would think of it as a healing. They might come with an example that I had today on my website. There's a boy who had a missing eyeball. So he came to be healed, and Branham said, "Go home, you're healed." Well, the kid's eyeball never grew back, and he came back to Branham, and, you know, they asked, "Why did your eyeball not grow back?" Well, Branham would take them through the prayer lines. He would tell them they were healed, and then they would, in turn, accept by claiming by faith that they're healed, and they would go home. And what happened is many of them went home. Some of them died. Several of them didn't get healed and went back to Alfred Pohl, and he was just, you know, at wit's end. So this faith healer came through town. He's left. Now he had to deal with the aftermath of all of these people who thought they were healed, and they're watching their loved ones die. And he said it had a huge impact on him. He almost left the faith.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's wow.
It's scary because that's the danger, right? There's people that are putting their hope in these faith healers. They're believing a spoken word of God, in a sense, from these people that have authority, quote unquote, in the latter rain. And then they go home, don't do other things that could help them in their health and eventually die, right? And at the same time, they're taking the things that these people are telling them, these preachers, as spoken word of God. Right. So they're probably even preaching, right, giving instruction that's contrary to what the Bible says. You know, that's what I find very dangerous.
Well, and that's one of the huge dangers in the movement itself. The you mentioned spoken word. I grew up with these books and pamphlets of the sermons of William Branham, and it was published under the name at that time, Spoken Word Recordings. And that name has later changed to Voice of God Recordings in Jeffersonville, Indiana. But you both understand the impact of this. If they're believing that this is a spoken word, in other words, these are people who say the word is the Bible, but they're using the phrase spoken word. So when they talk about the Bible to a normal Christian, a lot of times they're saying Bible verses that don't even exist. I've got a list of several several passages from the quote-unquote Bible that I grew up with that were in my head that I learned years later weren't even in the Bible at all. They were part of the spoken word. And so whenever you have men who can claim that that the words coming out of their mouth are a new quote-unquote word of God or Bible, they can literally say anything they want and make you do anything that they want, make you believe anything you want. And in the end, the question that you have to ask yourself is, if this spoken word is a new gospel, can it be compatible with the real gospel of Jesus Christ?
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And it's just interesting too, because, you know, we have explored different movements before, in our podcast, especially when we had just started Cultish, you know, certain movements who kind of, you know, even who would fall under the realms of just general Orthodox Christianity or just as a whole, just within the realms of evangelicalism, certain movements that are very, very well known, and if we mention their name, but they would, a lot of them would have the view of that there's a sort of, we're on the brink of this new revival of heaven being brought
right
down to earth. And we're just on the brink, and there's going to be this special generation of prophets and revelation and mantles to unravel.
Overflow of the Spirit.
Yes. And we talked about that substantially. And just so you know, too, some of the things in this article as well, too, you mentioned this, and maybe you can unravel this, that they're, how they viewed, you know, the sort of maybe elitist us versus them mentality, specifically with William Branham and The Message in your article on the Jonestown article. And we might even post a link as well too when we drop this episode. But it said, like, the militant stance against cold former religion became a central theme within the healing revival, or specifically the latter rain. And eventually the traditional, less formal denominations of the Christian faith were given the disparaging label. Members of mainstream Christianity were viewed as cold and formal by leaders of the movement who used Branham's doctrine in their sermons. And even Pentecostals who did not join their movement were labeled as cold and formal, because the whole ideology of the latter rain was that this is sort of a, in the latter days, there's going to be this special God releasing a spirit or giving this special anointing to the church that only the message had access to. So if you had Branham's ideology, then you are in the know. You are in this new revelation of the Spirit, versus if you are, even if you're tuned into the spiritual gifts or you're a continuationist, but you're not fully on board with Branham's ideology, you still would be viewed as cold or indifferent or having a religious spirit. Is that an accurate assessment, or what are your thoughts on that, John?
Yeah, that played a large part of, you know, the revival and its growth. But keep in mind that this, we're talking right now about the spiritual aspect and the dangerous aspect. Mm-hmm. But look at just the entertainment aspect. Mm. You have this movement, right, where it's gathering crowds of tens, hundred thousands of people, depending on the stadium and the location. You have people who are coming literally because this is entertaining. They see people who are being healed. Even the speeches themselves, if you listen to them, they're designed to be entertaining. And what happened is they call them cold and formal religion, because if you go sit in a normal church that's just simply reading the Bible, talking about the gospel, it's not entertaining. And once you planted that cold and formal, you know, view in people's heads, and they see all this excitement that's growing from this entertainment that they're watching, then they go back to their church and it's not as entertaining. Well, yeah, they're going to think, wow, this is cold and formal. I want to join in the entertaining thing. Mm-hmm. So you know, the Bible talks about the itching ears. I really believe that this is a good example of that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And what's fascinating as well too, is that the origins of the latter rain also brought in a lot of even very, very popular names that are kind of known in the word of faith movement, like Oral Roberts, for example. You mentioned him, and, you know, several other notable figures. But one of the, you know, we're talking about in this sphere of entertainment. There is a certain person, you mentioned their last name, and they are very well known when it comes to just in modern culture, and that is Kardashian. So we had talked about this from the very beginning of it. When you told me the connection, I was shocked. So the origins of, I mean, people know Kim Kardashian, who, you know, was married to Kanye West at one point. You know, they made, and it's made news throughout the years. They had a long running show, but the whole Kardashian family, they're directly connected to William Branham. And can you explain that real quickly?
I was extremely surprised whenever I saw this connection. I knew that, you know, the origins of William Branham predated the sermons that I had access to hear. He claimed that 1947 was whenever he got his alleged gift of healing. And a guy in Canada shared with me this pamphlet that was from 1945, where he's describing his great healing revivals in 1945. And so I started, you know, just trying to piece back together what happened in those early years, what happened leading up to the version of the stage persona that I knew and grew up with. And Branham kept referring to this name, Avok. And it was an unusual name to me, and so it stood out, and I started, you know, just digging, what can I find on AVOC in the newspapers? And just a few simple searches, and I'm just blown away that there was this thing that existed, right? This guy from, he was a faith healer from, I think, Iran, who he was invited to come to heal a son of a very wealthy owner of a vineyard in Palm Springs. And Branham mentions going to be with this AVOC and touring with him, et cetera. But he never mentioned the name of who invited him. He always says they or these people or those who sponsored AVOC. And I just literally had no idea. When I began searching the, you know, the tour of AVOC and going into Palm Springs, I stumbled on this book by Jerry Oppenheimer that's describing the Kardashian family, and it came up in basically a Google search. He's mentioning AVOC, and he's mentioning the Kardashian family sponsoring him. So I went back to the transcripts of William Branham, and Branham says the same people that sponsored AVOC sponsored me, and they wanted to buy me a Cadillac. And he goes into this ramble of how he won't own a Cadillac, you know, how no good minister would own a Cadillac, and he would instead drive his old beat-up station wagon or whatever it was he had. And so I'm opening this Kardashian book for the first time, and I see this other name that stands out to me. The Kardashian family was related to the founder of the Full Gospel Businessmen's International Association. And they're the ones who basically sponsored several of William Branham's revival tours. And that led me to finding where they actually did give him a Cadillac. I've got a picture of him with the Cadillac. But all of this led back to the Kardashian family, which just blew my mind.
Yeah, and it's even some of the aspects too of even the historical origins of how they even got here to America,
right,
was fascinating. I mean, talking about the 1915 to 1917, you know, the Ottoman Empire, they were committing, you know, the Armenian genocide,
mm-hmm.
and then they came over here in rescue of that, and then eventually it was their national name wasn't Kardashian, it was a different name in which that derived from. What was that called again?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah. So that, like, they came over here in, they come over here in exile and as refugees based off of the Armenian genocide with the Ottoman Empire. Mm-hmm. So just seeing how that all fled together. And just so you know, too, that would explain, too, I mean, this is sort of jumping ahead, but you think about last year, I mean, pre, you know, 2019, but when things were relatively a little different than as they are now, you know, back when people would go to church services, 20,000 people in a church service without a worry in the world. And you think about when Kanye West did his performance at Joel Olstein's church, when he, with the Jesus King album, and that, you know, that there's some controversy in and of itself. But you were saying that just from the origins of the Kardashians and their relation to William Branham, it would make sense then of why perhaps they would be influenced by Joel Olstein's ministry.
Well, there's so many connections. I mean, this is a spider web that literally grows through the entire United States.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Joel Osteen. His father was John Osteen, and I've got newspaper articles where he's joining in this revival. He was at Shreveport at the Tabernacle there, I believe, if memory serves, where Branham's headquarters for the Voice of Healing magazine was published. The connections are just unreal. I mean, when I started going through the Kardashian family, trying to piece together, okay, if Dima Shakarian was the name of the guy who founded the Full Gospel Businessman's Association. So I'm looking at the family tree. I'm looking, how does he relate to the patriarch of the Kardashian family? I stumbled upon Kate Upton in a completely different search.
Right.
Kate Upton was the great-great-granddaughter of Roy E. Davis Sr. through Roy E. Davis Jr., at least according to this ethnicity of celebrities, the ancestry race that I was going through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the connections to Hollywood, to the entertainment industry, just seem to flow through this whole thing. And even down to the descriptions that the newspaper gave of the men who did it, they basically described them as entertainers. One article in particular that just, it really painted the picture in my head. And interestingly, it was the same picture that when I actually saw it, what I had painted in my head matched. This guy said that William Branham was coming into town. He was debonair, slicked back. I can't remember his exact words, but he's basically describing Tom Cruise coming into Vandalia, Illinois, whereas your average minister is going to be, especially in that town, would be bib overalls and, you know, plaid shirt. Well, mm-hmm. Branham's coming in looking like Hollywood.
Right.
And then I saw this photograph of William Branham with Avok Hagopian, and both of them are wearing this very expensive white suits. I mean, nothing that you would see that your average evangelist of the day wearing. It was all just basically entertainment flowing through it.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. And so one of the things I just want to bring people into is because we're talking about the latter rain, and people typically view this of something just amazing, this amazing unfolding of the power of God and these signs, wonders, and miracles. And they sort of see Branham as sort of this perfectly untarnished figure that was really God's prophet and messenger. Yeah, so what I'm going to go ahead and do in regards to just understanding the morality of William Branham, I'm going to go and play this clip. And then, John, I'm going to go and have you just unpack it and so people can understand the broader context and how that relates to the latter rain as well. So here we go.
When they told me that Pig Alley in Paris was such a ill-famed place, how did I know I was never there? But I went out there to find out if it was right or not. I took two or three more ministers and went out there to those women's and things that stripped on them streets and things. It's the truth!
Okay, so can you just give us the ESPN analysis highlights level of just the breakdown of that clip and what the context of William Branham is behind that quote? What is he talking about? Take us into what's going on behind that clip when he said that.
Yeah, so this is basically the climax of this movement as it grows. It's funny, if you study Pentecostalism and you know any of that history, they grew, they split, they grew, those split, and you have all these different branches of Pentecostalism, right? Well, the latter rain, at least from what I've studied of it, this movement was something that grew very quickly and then branched off and split and severed branches very quickly. William Branham's talking about the climax of his involvement with the revivals, Latter Rain Revival and Voice of Healing Revival for a period of time merged, and then they split. And it's funny, if you talk to somebody who's deeply involved with the Latter Rain movement that split off of the Branham movement, they'll say Branham was never in it. But if you study the deep hardcore theology, it's all based on the same thing. Well, Branham grew to popularity that went around the globe during the 50s, and he did a tour through Europe. And basically, he goes into Europe and he hears that there's this place called Place Pigalle, France, near Paris or in Paris. And he hears that there's all these women just stripping right on the streets. And his quote pretty well sums it up. He says, I heard this and I didn't believe it. How would I know unless I go see it? So he goes and he sees it. And he comes back and his conclusion is, yep, they strip right down on the streets. What's funny about it is he's taking these ministers who, I mean, these people in America were almost elevated to this platform, this pedestal that's above any other minister in the nation. You've got all of these ministers who are now cold and formal, and you've got this handful of men, basically, who's leading all of this revival, who are extremely, you know, the people believe they're incredibly holy. They're going and they're staying at expensive hotels like the Piccadilly. Branham's wearing an expensive Long Island's watch that he got, you know, during the revival. He's making all this money. They go see strippers in Place Pigalle, France. And his William Branham's brother, Howard, at the time, ran a bar in Jeffersonville. So you've got William Branham, who's preaching against alcoholism, his brother, Howard, who's in the revival supporting him. And then I've got newspapers from his bar selling Irish shillelagh back in Jeffersonville during the time of the revival. So these men were nothing like their stage personas when they left stage.
Right. Right. And just, you know, too, this, I mean, talking about the level of hotels that they would be living at, this would be the equivalent of having a penthouse suite at the Bellagio while, you know, having sort of a well-known, you're bringing the revival of God and probably, you know, preaching your whole gospel message, but that's the type of luxury they would be pursuing then, right?
Right.
Okay. And so one of the other aspects too, which I'm curious about, because this kind of connects into how they connected with Jones, and this is, you know, we're definitely covering a lot of ground here, which I appreciate, is that in your article, you mentioned that William Branham, he had claimed that his ministry fell within the prophet category of the latter rain fivefold ministry. And the funny thing is we've also heard other people who are well known within the realms of hypercharismania sort of use that language. And again, just because someone uses that doesn't mean we're making a complete equivalence, but this is something that Branham appealed to as well too. But he said that he made a frequent use of the title Spoken Word of God for his sermons, which eventually were recorded, branded and sold with his title. Branham believed that the fivefold office of prophet, his particular gift, had superiority to the other offices, alleging that Jesus Christ would be manifesting in the form of a prophet. And then combining verse 25 from Joel chapter 2 with John 10:34 from the New Testament, Branham taught members that his sect, that they were gods through the manifestation of God present with his own spoken word.
Little g gods.
Yeah, little g gods. So it's not the first time we've heard little God's doctrine. This seems to be a consistent thing amongst these sorts of groups. And there's someone else that we will introduce in a second who you'll see was very influenced by this message as well, too. So with all that being said, can you just explain maybe a little more in depth as we kind of wrap up the last 10 minutes, your perspective of Branham's view of the fivefold ministry and how that formulated the latter rain and how that connected to someone by the name of James Warren Jones.
Right. That's an infamous name.
And we're talking about Jim Jones as well, too. For anyone who's wondering. That's his full name.
Right. My perception of what happened, just based on the timeline, the history, and the aftermath, is that what happened on the religious side of things, as opposed to the white supremacy background, you know, this running off to the side, they created this religious engine that took off from the train station with no track. And it went much faster, much bigger, much broader than they ever thought or dreamed that could happen. And in the early stages of this Latter-rain movement, they basically were, you know, William Branham's trying to elevate himself as the leader, right? He's saying anybody who can prophesy can be a leader, can be the spoken word. Well, what happens when you say this to another man who says, well, I want to be the spoken word too?
Right.
Pretty soon he starts doing it. And then a third, then another. Well, then you've got this consortium of all these opposing prophets, none of them in unison whatsoever. And so this thing grew so quickly out of control that Latter Rain itself began to separate from the voice of healing revival. While they were merged at one point in time, they deviated. Latter Rain movement itself became a different sect of Pentecostalism. And Branhamism basically grew from a subsect of that, specifically the Manifested Sons of God subsect. And what happened was, when it grew out of control and he realized that he's now playing second base to, you know, all of these other guys that are hitting home runs out of the park, he tries to stop it. And he tries to say that there can only be one true prophet. And what's interesting is, to achieve this, he rewrote the Bible timeline. He basically started this doctrine that said God only had one major prophet on the earth at a time, and started promoting himself as this major prophet. I've been to countless sermons from, you know, all through my life, from coast to coast, where the pastors are basically parroting exactly that. They're preaching from Branham's sermons. They're not preaching from the Bible. And they're saying that there can only be one major prophet on earth at the time. And I think I told you guys, when I left this religion, I just read the Bible like, I don't know, 10 or 15 times over and over to wash this out of my head. Mm-hmm. Well, I kept reading this phrase, as it was in the days of King Darius. And I'm like, wait a minute. I flip back to the next prophet, as it was in the days of King Darius. And so I put together my own timeline of major prophets, minor prophets, and that got me to even thinking, what is a major prophet? What is a minor prophet? And in the cult that I grew up in, major prophet meant you were a superior prophet, because that's the way Branham taught it. But in the Bible, it just meant you're major because we have this longer section of text from you.
Right.
Had nothing to do with, you know, status or one prophet greater than another one. But I put this timeline together and I start to see there's several major, even, you know, considering the title major prophet in the Bible, there's several of them that their timelines interlap. So what happened is, this thing grew so far out of control. Branham started trying to elevate himself above everyone else, and it made a mess, and that mess you can probably sum up with Jim Jones if you study how he started, what happened, and in the tragic aftermath.
Yeah, and that's something we want to pack into. So just to kind of get wet people's appetites, what was the initial contact that the Latter Rain movement, when they crossed paths with Jim Jones? Because my first exposure to it, and I remember seeing this years ago, was it looked like an advertisement, like a classic classified ad, where it talks about the open door to all mankind. Nationwide Ministries Convention, special guest speaker William Branham, but along with the Honorable Reverend, is hosted by the People's Temple, hosted by Reverend James W. Jones, or James W. Jones. And so that was the first exposure that I had, just seeing that, wow, there's healing revival services held together. And obviously I know that Jim Jones started his, you know, quote unquote ministry out of Indiana, around the civil rights movement, and based it off of this social justice, equality, kind of speaking for, you know, racial justice and those sorts of things. In contrast, especially if it's just so fascinating, maybe we can unravel this, the contrast between the dualism, I would say,
so different
between Branham's upbringing, hearing that those horrific racism that we played at the very beginning of the episode with Jim Jones's vision of how he wanted to achieve racial equality through divine economic socialism. But anyways, what was the first initial kind of contact? How do those two just initially merge together?
Well, So you had the revival that was spreading, the Lateran revival that's spreading through the United States. We also had William Branham's headquarter church was in Jeffersonville, Indiana. I live in Jeffersonville, and you know, a drive for me to go up to Indianapolis today is like an hour and a half. If I have a lead foot, it might be a little bit less than that.
Right.
Back then, you know, we're talking maybe under 2 hours he could visit that area. Well, Jones himself also had a Pentecostal background. He grew up in a small town. He enjoyed going to hear the local Pentecostal church. He also went through a series of just, you know, trials that led him into a situation where he was very susceptible to joining a cult. There's question as to whether he was forming a cult before he met William Branham, or did William Branham influence his direction. I'm not the one to make that call, but it looks very much like he was being attracted into a cult, at least from what I see.
Okay. All right. Okay. That definitely makes sense. So we'll definitely appreciate making that connection. So if you guys have enjoyed this first episode, the next one, we're going to talk further about how William Branham's Lateran movement affected Jim Jones and ultimately paved a unique path to Jonestown. Again, this is something a lot of people were not aware of. I remember my mind just being blown when this connection was made. So if you guys really enjoyed this episode, go ahead and share this on social media. Let us know what you thought. And we look forward to talking to you all in part two, where we enter into the Kingdom of the Cults and the Road to Jonestown. Talk to you guys soon.